All right, welcome everybody. I'd like to call to order the June 6, 2016 special meeting of the Marysville Board of Education work session. Could I have a roll call, please?
Mr. Luke?
Here.
Mr. Pleasant?
Here.
Ms. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Devine?
Here. Thank you. So today we are going to have a work session to review the to discuss and review the survey results, and it's my pleasure to introduce Mr. Paul Fallon, who kind of headed up this whole project. So thank you so much for coming today.
My pleasure.
We really appreciate it.
Superintendent Atkins, is there anything you want to preface my presentation?
Everyone received a copy of the results quite some time ago for review. So this is kind of our follow-up and our opportunity to ask questions. Certainly, Paul comes with a very deep background in working with schools and helping with surveys and different levy kind of things. And I know we have some questions really around that idea of the income tax, and we were a bit surprised at the results of that. So we should hold questions to the end, I guess.
Sure.
Would be the best thing, but he'll kind of go over pieces, and then we'll be able to ask questions and kind of dip into his knowledge and expertise around maybe what some other school districts have done in similar situations and kind of next steps as well. Fair enough.
With that, let me begin by talking first and foremost about the process itself. The survey data that I'm going to be presenting was gathered through telephone interviews performed by specially trained opinion research interviewers. That is, they weren't telemarketers who were trained to elicit affirmative responses. They were data gatherers who were trained to elicit truthful responses. It's conducted with 303 randomly selected registered voters residing within the Marysville Exempted Village School District of Ohio, using a combination of valid residential, voice-over internet protocol, and cellular telephone listings. And the reason we use cellular telephone listings now is to avoid a coverage error that would be created if we just relied on, say, landline service. The estimated margin of sampling error is plus or minus 5.62%, net results in a confidence interval of 11.24%, within which the results could vary. It just means when you're factoring or rounding, if we asked on a survey, what is your favorite topping on a pizza, if 50% of the respondents said black olives, because of sampling variability, that number could be as low as 44% to as high as 56%. The interviews were conducted during the period of April 25th through April 28th, so this is very recent data. And the data was stratified so that differences in vital characteristics such as age, race, gender, and geography are represented proportionally to their percentages of the district's electorate. The reason we do that is to prevent over or under sampling from in some way distorting the results. Due to rounding, not all the results will add up to 100%, and the data is presented in a slightly different order than the questions were asked in order to create some subject-specific modules, if you will. And unless otherwise noted, only statistically significant differences outside the confidence interval for the margin of error have been reported in this presentation of key findings. And I say unless otherwise noted because there are a couple instances where the absence of differences is actually a story, and I'll put some rhetorical emphasis on that. First, let's talk a little bit about the opinion environment. We start the survey typically by asking about right direction, wrong track ratings for various local entities or levels of governance. And the reason we do that is to acclimate respondents to the survey-taking process, that is, to build their confidence and their ability to participate. But we also find that it can be a good barometer of how restless or conversely how disenchanted people are. We did a survey in mid-May among voters in the state of Ohio, and at the time, the right direction was 53%, and the wrong track was 26%. Now, I say that because ideally, you want the right direction figure to be at or above 60%, and the wrong track figure to be at or below 20%. So there was a little bit of restlessness. However, when we in your survey, when we started out about asking about the Marysville area, because not everyone lives within the jurisdiction of the city of Marysville, as you can see, 76% say that the area is moving in the right direction, just 12% say it's gotten off onto the wrong track. Comparatively, the numbers are much better than they are for the state of Ohio, and that signals that people are generally pretty content. We also asked about the school district, and the right direction figure was at 62%, and the wrong track figure was 18%. So the right direction wasn't quite as good, but still In my opinion, it was pretty strong and indicated that there's no restlessness or disenchantment that serves as an underlying factor in the opinion environment. Among parents, that is, people who had children enrolled in the school system at the time the survey was conducted, 79%, a whopping 79%, said the school district's moving in the right direction, and 17% said it had gotten off onto the wrong track. So as you can see, things locally are pretty placid right now. We also asked, which of the following is the biggest reason that you moved to or stayed in the area? And this was done in a forced choice battery in which the interviewers read the response options to the participants or the respondents. The first most frequently selected one was to be near employment at 31%. Second, at 24%, was to be near family. Third, at 18%, was because they were born or raised here. Fourth, at 10%, was the quality of the schools. 6% said the low cost of living and housing. 11% volunteered other extraneous responses, which are available, and 2% said they were unsure. As you can see, there were some substantial differences between parents and non-parents, and I just want to call your attention to a couple of them. First and foremost, overall, the primary reason that parents have moved here was for employment opportunities. And that's a little bit unusual. I was telling Chris earlier that I have worked on about 80 different school district projects this year. Probably have more public school districts in Ohio as clients than anyone else in my industry. I've also worked in about 37 different states on a variety of different public funding projects, including for a lot of different types of public school systems. And in communities like this, typically that number is lower, considerably lower. But in this case, this is a unique environment, and it suggests that employment is actually the magnet that's drawing people here. I also want to point out, too, that among parents, schools were second, but just at 19%. And for those people who are non-parents, that is people who at the time of the survey did not have a child enrolled in school. So they could be parents of charter school or ECOT students or parents of kids that aren't old enough to be enrolled in school. But for our purposes, we consider them non-parents to aggregate the data so we could have large enough cell sizes for analysis. As you can see, among them, just 6% said to be because of the quality of the schools. Jennifer?
Oh, I don't mean to interrupt you, but couldn't you make an argument, though, with Honda being so prominent that they are kind of unique in, you know, compared to, like...
Yeah, you could.
So, I mean, that's why it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, that you're absolutely right about, but this is a fairly low number.
Okay.
Overall, the fact that it's fourth for a community like this.
There
are a lot of other communities, typically urban ones, in which I see this type of data, but not in rural or ex-urban ones.
Okay.
We also asked, do you think that property taxes in the particular area where you live are too high, generally pretty fair, or too low? At the time the survey was taken, 39% said they're too high, 51%, a statistical majority, said they're pretty fair, 1% said they're too low, and 10% said they were unsure. As you can see from the inset box in the right-hand corner, there are a couple differences I want to point out. And first and foremost, there are some non-differences I want to point out. And that is, when you compare parents with non-parents, those differences were not statistically significant. And in this case, what that means is there was an unacceptably high probability that the modest differences between parents and non-parents were due to chance. Or we can hypothesize that attitudes about taxes are not affected by whether or not you're a parent, or simply put. Men, 45% compared to women at 33%. That was a substantial gender difference we observed. Also, Republicans at 48% compared to Democrats at 33%. Let me point out, this is based on party registration. And what that means is that it was based on how they were registered at the time. And the reason I point that out is because in Ohio, you become a registered partisan by voting in a primary during an even year at least once over a four-year period. If you don't do so, your registration reverts to being an unaffiliated voter. So there are some people who are listed in the survey as being unaffiliated voters who may think of themselves as partisans but didn't participate in a primary election. Also, respondents 45 to 64, also much higher at 50%. So there were some substantial subgroup differences there. We also asked, how do you get most of the information you hear about the Marysville schools? Once again, this was also in a forced choice battery. First most frequently occurring response at 30% was reading the newspaper. I'm going to jump ahead, though, because I'm going to take a little bit of the mystery out of this one, or the suspense. What was interesting was the disparity between parents and non-parents here. Among non-parents, 40%, that's 4 in 10, say they're getting their information about the schools from the newspaper. That's a substantial number, especially in a community like this where non-parents outnumber parents. What that tells me, and Jennifer can talk more about this, but what that tells me is that those relationships with the media are critically important. Among parents, however, the first most frequently occurring response was reading district literature, such as the newsletter. So you can see here you've got essentially a tale of two cities, if you will. One group's getting their information one way, and another group is getting theirs another way, which points out some of the complexities of communicating in the information era.
Is that typical?
Yeah, it is.
Newspaper?
Well, not newspaper necessarily, but that bifurcation is. In community, the Cincinnati Public Schools are one of my clients, and they're a large urban community, and they garner a lot of attention from the televised news media because they're the biggest game in town. So it varies from place to place. Looking at education, we asked, overall, how would you rate the quality of education being provided by the Marysville City Schools? As you can see, 70% said excellent or good, and that rating was derived by taking the 25% who said excellent, adding to it the 45% who said good. 15% said fair, 2% said poor or very poor, and 14% were unsure. Now, let me tell you that that's a very high number. It's not stratospheric, but that's a pretty high number, and it's a very reassuring one as well. In fact, if we were in the throes of a very contentious political campaign, and I looked at that number, and I'd say, you know what, we don't need to talk about education. It's like me walking in and saying, my name is Paul, my name is Paul, my name is Paul. Well, you already knew my name is Paul. And much in the same way, probably don't need to talk quite as much about the quality of education because I think it's already given in this community. In fact, I suspect many of the people that you think of as critics or detractors probably feel that way as well, which is, in a strange way, reassuring. A couple subgroup differences I want to point out. This time there was a statistically significant difference. Parents at 85% were more likely to say excellent or good, but even 61% of non-parents said excellent or good as well. Democrats were at 81%, and respondents who've lived in the community between 11 and 20 years at 78% seemed to also be more satisfied. But the numbers were very strong across the board. They really were, and I don't think that this is a matter in the community that is, by and large, going to be a driving factor in decisions that are made. In fact, as I wanted to call your attention to the fact that the rating was above 50% for every subgroup in the survey. We also asked, would you be more or less likely to support a levy, or would it make no difference in your decision if you knew that some of the money was used for some of the various programs? And the reason we did this was to test the importance of those programs, because it's not just enough to say, I like this program. Separating the wheat from the chaff comes when people say, you know what, I like this program enough to spend money on it. So we tested a couple of different programs in the course of the survey, and as you can see, 47% said they'd be more likely to support a levy if money was spent to preserve and possibly expand the STEM program to kindergarten up to grade 12, which offers specialized coursework in science, technology, engineering, and math. By the way, we explained that because I found in focus group testing that a lot of people don't know what the acronym STEM stands for. So we have to explain it during the course of the interview. I also want to point out, however, that at 47%, that's not an exceedingly high number. In fact, when I'm in a campaign, like I have a lot of clients down south that are in K countywide school districts, and you can't do anything without being on TV in order to run a competitive campaign. And we'll say to ourselves, we're not going to put a message on television, that is, we're not going to spend that considerable amount of money unless the message makes at least 50% of respondents more likely to engage in the desired behavior. And none of the various programs we tested got quite that high. Now, I know that's probably a little bit jarring, but keep in mind, people are already pretty happy with the quality of education. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, to make up for lost state funding in order to preserve the current program services and teaching staff levels only made 35% more likely. To preserve the partnership program with local employers and colleges such as Honda, Otterbein University, and Columbus State College made 33% more likely. And just 31% said they were more likely to preserve the all-day kindergarten program. So at 47%, that's probably the top performing element in terms of compelling people to say, this is important enough to me that I'm willing to spend money to keep it. A couple differences, though, that I want to point out. In the top box, these were the results just among parents. And in the bottom box, these are results among non-parents. As you can see, among parents, 44% would be more likely to preserve the STEM program. And it was 48% for non-parents. As you can see from the asterisks, those were not statistically significant differences. So once again, your answer to that response was not affected by whether or not you were a parent. However, to make up for lost state funding in order to preserve the current program services and teaching staff levels, 52% of parents were more likely compared to 26% of non-parents. That's a pretty substantial disparity, in my opinion. 32% of parents said to preserve the partnership programs. That was not a statistically significant difference, as 33% of non-parents gave the same answer, almost identical results. And lastly, preserving all-day kindergarten garnered 36% among parents compared to 28% among non-parents. It was a statistically significant difference because this is a cell-sensitive calculation. This is what's known as categorical data, and you use something known as chi-square testing. But differences were not sizable, nevertheless. We also did something known as split-sample testing. And this was for my own intellectual curiosity, but knowing that finances have been a continuing area of concern and interest for this community, I wanted to do something a little unique. So what we did is we programmed the computer to randomly assign respondents to one of two versions of the same question. And I want to read them to you and then talk about it. Version A, which has asked to half the respondents, asked, do you agree or disagree that the Marysville schools need to continue offering programs that provide workforce training to attract more businesses to the area? 88% agree, a whopping 88%. Version B asks, do you agree or disagree that the Marysville City Schools need to continue offering programs that provide workforce training, even if it means that more tax dollars will be needed to provide them? Now, 67% is not a number to scoff at. But the fact that there's a 21% difference is a pretty sizable disparity in my mind. And I would characterize that as an effect size. That is the estimate of what kind of impact adding a financial element to this discussion will have on the reaction it garners within the public. And I thought that was a pretty big difference. The reassuring aspect is that that's a pretty popular notion, even when you start talking about cost implications. But nevertheless, 21% is pretty sizable, in my opinion. And it's pretty telling. When we broke the data down, the differences between parents and non-parents were not statistically significant, although there was a sizable difference in the differences between forms. As you can see, there was 11% difference between parents for version A and version B, which is the version with money compared to the version without money, and there was a 25% difference for non-parents. We also asked respondents about their orientation towards funding and financing for the school system by presenting two juxtaposing points of view and asking them which one they agree with more. For example, the respondents were asked, is it more important to have an excellent school system, even if taxes have to be raised, to provide the best education possible? Or is it more important to have a good school system with lower taxes, even if it does not provide the best education possible? As you can see, 67%, two-thirds, chose the former. Just 27% chose the latter. There were substantial differences between parents and non-parents. At 77% for parents opting for an excellent school system, even if it means higher taxes, compared to 62% of non-parents, but those are both above the 50% threshold. Actually, they're both above the 60% threshold as well. Keep in mind, though, we're not attaching a dollar figure to it. This is really an abstract concept. But the good news in my mind is that people say, in concept, they're willing to pay for a high-quality education. Now, looking more closely at finances, we also asked, how would you rate the job that the Marysville Exempted Village School District is doing managing its budget and tax dollars? Now here, we drop down. Remember, using the same measure and the same metric for the quality of education, we're at 70%. Now we're at 49%, with 7% saying excellent and 42% saying good. We're below the 50% threshold, and that worries me a little bit. Because ideally, a school district like this needs to be above the 50% threshold. And typically it is. That's a substantial disparity. 21% said fair, 10% said poor, very poor, and 20% were unsure. A couple sizable, statistically significant differences I want to point out. Among parents, 65% say excellent or good, which is reassuring because they're presumably the people who know best based on their firsthand observations on a daily basis. They're with you. But among non-parents, we're pretty far below the 50% threshold at that point, at 40%. There's also an interesting difference between Democrats and unaffiliated respondents. Republicans fell within that mid-range value, but 59% of Democrats rated it as excellent or good, compared to just 44% of unaffiliated respondents. And again, they're people who are not registered as partisans. And I don't know what to make of that difference, but it was too large to just overlook. By the way, this is when you start... Oh, thank you very much. When you start talking about things that probably warrant more attention and need to be touted a little more frequently, a little more loudly, this is probably something that, in my mind, rises to the top of the list. Instead of talking so much about education, something about which there already seems to be a robust consensus, this is probably an area where more education and advocacy would be warranted. Oh, we also asked, looking back a few years, as you may recall, a tax levy was rejected by voters and staff cuts and program reductions had to be made throughout the school district. Since that time, do you think that things at the Marysville Exempted School District have generally gotten better, stayed about the same, or gotten worse? As you can see, 16% say things have gotten better, 55% and majority said that things have stayed the same, 7% say they've gotten worse, and 22% were unsure. Now, I want to point out in this inset box, the bad news here is that there's no statistically significant difference between parents and non-parents. And ideally, you would have wanted a sizable difference there, and with the presumption that parents would be the first to become attuned to the changes that have occurred since about 2012. But that hasn't been the case. There were slightly bigger differences, and these were statistically significant. When we looked at respondents 20-plus years, that is, your longest-term residents, 21%, and Democrats also 21% as well. But by and large, I don't think the perception has caught up to the reality yet about how things have changed, and that's not unusual in many school districts or with many other public institutions. As I tell people, it's like an aircraft carrier. Just because you shut off the engine doesn't mean it isn't going to drift for a while. And it's that way with public perception as well. We also asked those respondents who said things have gotten better, those folks right there, in an open-ended question we asked, what is the biggest reason you think things have gotten better? That was a subsample of 49 respondents. The first most frequently occurring response is better curriculum and college preparation at 18%, followed closely at 17% by good teaching staff and administration. 10% said the STEM program. 8% said better financial management. 8% said they've just heard good things. And in a small community like this where you don't have centralized media, that's reassuring because it says something about the social fabric of the community and how powerful person-to-person communication can be. 6% said the district has more money because of the levy passage. 4% said they got better buildings. 27% gave extraneous responses, and 2% were unsure. Now, I did a word count, and I wanted to call to your attention some of the most frequently occurring words that appeared in the verbatim responses. This is after we took out common words and conjunctives and things like that. 16% used the term good. 8% used the term college. 8 used the term STEM. 8 used the term teacher. 6 used the word right, and 5 used the word job. Now here are just a couple of the comments to give you a flavor for what people said. One respondent said, they cleaned house over there and things have just changed. And this is from the words of your mouths of your fellow citizens. Another respondent said, I think the institution of the STEM school is a step in the right direction. And I think a lot of American schools have gotten away from the science and math. Another respondent said, I think they have pretty good teachers, hiring good teachers, and having good education. We asked those respondents who said that things have gotten worse, which was a subsample of 20, what is the biggest reason you think things have gotten worse? 25% said financial mismanagement. Now keep in mind, this is a fraction of a fraction. This is a very small number of people. 20% said not enough staff, 10% said bigger class sizes, 10% said programs and activities were removed, 10% said they got unqualified staff, poor teachers, 20% gave other extraneous responses, and 5% were unsure. Some of the terms that appeared most frequently in the verbatim responses were teacher, which was said by 6 respondents, enough, which is said 5 times, money 4 times, and cut 3 times. And those numbers are actually high, given that this was just a subsample of 20 respondents. Here are a couple of the comments. Either they don't have enough budget or they're not focusing their taxes in the right areas. Another respondent said, a great deal of the emphasis has been put on the STEM school at the expense of the high school. The high school students and the high school teachers feel that they've become second class. The high school students and the high school teachers feel that they've become second class. The class sizes are bigger and the workloads for teachers are larger. The teachers don't even get lunch because they have to watch the kids during the kids' lunch and recess.
Why can't they eat while they watch? I'm kidding.
I thought this was
really... Why do they
really
need to eat? Come on. No.
I thought that this was really important information.
Yeah.
It's evident to me that teachers are engaging the public in some fairly organized fashion. Mm-hmm. The fact that you've got respondents quoting teachers and citing information that's by and large pretty esoteric suggests to me that there may be an undercurrent of dissent that exists. Mm-hmm. And I'm just looking at this objectively. I don't have a lot of experience with the school district, but that's what this data tells me. And it also says to me that it's important for the district to redouble its efforts to be talking about things that are probably more important than lunch and recess.
Right.
Were you keeping track of the people in the sample that worked in the district?
No, we did not ask that. We also asked, over the last few years, do you think that the Marysville Exempted Village School District has cut too much, about the right amount, or needs to cut more? 16% said cut too much, 44% said right amount, 15% said needs to cut more, 25% were unsure. You know what we learned from that? Nothing. There's no consensus here. Among parents, 28% said too much is cut. Among non-parents, 19% said more needs to be cut. Among 45 to 64-year-olds, who are those folks? Where did we hear their names earlier?
STEM.
Remember when we talked about those taxes being too high? Mm-hmm. How that particular age cohort stood out? Democrats, 33% said too much has been cut. We also, as you may know, because of unfunded state mandates, inflation, and changes in tax laws, the school district will be facing an operating deficit within the next few years. As a result, do you think the school district should make more cuts and reductions so they do not need any more money or seek voter approval for an additional tax to maintain the current programs and services? 28% would prefer that you make more cuts. 58%, a robust majority, prefer to seek a levy. 3% voluntary combination thereof, and 11% were unsure. Here's how the data breaks down looking at some of the subgroups. Overall, as I said, 28% prefer cuts, 58% a levy. Among parents, whopping 71% prefer a levy. Parents have probably reached their threshold of tolerance with cuts at this point. Among non-parents, 52%. It's almost a jump ball. Republicans, 40% prefer cuts, 42% prefer to seek a levy. Democrats, 71% prefer for the district to seek a levy. Unaffiliated respondents, 64%. Among those who said taxes were too high, 45% prefer cuts, a plurality, and 40% prefer to seek another levy. Here's how the data, and this was interesting, I'm not sure why this is. I couldn't quite attribute it as an artifact of age differences, so I put it up here, but I did allude to the fact that it could be a species relationship. Among those respondents who lived in the district less than 10 years, it was 68% preferring to seek a levy. Drops down to 63% for respondents 11 and 20 years old. Between 11 and 20 years, and those who lived in the community 20 years or more dropped down below the 50% threshold. And I'm not sure that that data is actionable because it's really hard to say, okay, we're just going to talk to people who lived here 20 years or more, because that could include 21-year-olds. And this may not be an indication of age. It may be an indication of the orientation they have and their attitudes towards the school system. So don't just look at that and say, wow, that's got to be senior citizens. We also asked, if the school district does decide to seek a levy within the next few years, would you prefer that it be an earned income tax, which is charged only on work wages, or a property tax, which is charged only to property owners? Keep in mind, this is Sophie's choice. And to some extent, this is a false dichotomy. Because as you know from 2012, people can also say, no, I don't want anything at all. So keep that in mind. But if forced to choose between the two, 36% prefer an earned income tax, 32% prefer a property tax, 1% volunteered that they prefer a combination of both, 5% said neither, 7% were unsure. By the way, there is a lot that goes into making a decision like this. Earned income taxes have a very rocky history in Ohio. On top of that, I've been involved in instances where groups came out and organized opposition. I'm not talking about ideological groups. I'm talking about chambers of commerce and other groups as well. This is when school districts have inadvertently awakened sleeping giants. So you have to be very careful. This is something that has to be carefully thought out well in advance of pursuing it. Overall, 56% prefer the earned income tax, 54% for parents, 57% for non-parents. Once again, due to chi-square testing, those differences were not statistically significant. Among those who say make more cuts, 65% prefer the earned income tax. Among those who say taxes are too high, 67% prefer the earned income tax. Now, I don't know that that's going to garner, this idea is going to garner support from them. So be cautious of that. Also, among age groups, 18 to 44, 49% prefer the earned income tax. It goes up to 53% for 45 to 64 years of age, and at 65 and older, whopping 77% prefer the earned income tax. Jennifer?
Paul, just to give them some perspective, too, I mean, as a company, I don't think we've worked on an earned income tax issue, like a new one, and probably, I mean, Troy, which was probably like 15, 20 years ago. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the economy was bad, you know, in the just recently, and we're kind of going through better times now. So I don't know, just reflecting on that, how often do you see newly earned income taxes? I'm just kind of giving you...
They're fairly infrequent.
Yeah. I didn't know, because you probably see it more, because you do polling much more than we work with clients. So I just wanted to get your perspective on that.
I wouldn't say it's not like Sasquatch.
Right.
You got more than one or two sightings a year, but it's a fairly rare animal. And there are a couple reasons for that, not the least of which is sometimes chambers of commerce or other affiliated groups will quietly tap someone on the shoulders and say, this isn't a good idea. We don't like this. And that pretty much ends the conversation right then and there. Or a large employer can do the same thing from time to time. And the second reason is it's a little difficult to explain. Now, they're more popular in areas with high percentages of senior voters, obviously, especially when you explain to them that Social Security and pensions and other forms of passive income are exempt.
And this is a community that's surrounded by other school districts that have earned income taxes as well. So, I mean, I don't know if that influences at all.
It's an excellent point.
Yeah.
It could. And Jonathan Otter just increased theirs.
Mm-hmm.
They had one.
Yeah.
And just increased. And mm-hmm. Fairbanks has one.
Mm-hmm.
Just Triad.
I think Buckeye Valley does.
Now, I want to close my presentation by sharing with you the Lamborghini fallacy. That is the mistaken notion that because people may enjoy having something like an exotic sports car, they are willing to pay for one, which any informal observation of the types of cars on the road would easily refute. That is, just because people say they want a STEM program, just because they like the idea of an earned income tax, when start confronting them with the actual figures, you may find that people get weak knees very quickly and start to vacillate a little bit. That's not unusual. So keep in mind, this is all theoretical until that tax bill or that actual figure is determined and appears in black and white in the ballot. Now with that, Jennifer, is there anything overlooked?
No.
Yeah, and I feel bad. I should have introduced our guest,
okay,
Jennifer, as well. So if you...
She's going to present.
Okay, yeah, she's going to present next. Okay,
actually,
okay.
Paul and I didn't collude at all in our presentations, but they're very complimentary, so that's a good sign. I'll be presenting after them, so I'll let Paul have the floor now.
Other questions for me?
There were a couple of times that you listed Democrats as a group and did not list Republicans. Was that because, I think you said at one point, Republicans tended to...
They fell in mid-range values within the confidence intervals, margin of error's confidence interval.
Okay.
Let me pick up on what Dick said. Is there any way of knowing, out of the 330, how many Democrats there are? I mean...
Well, registered Democrats?
No, how many you surveyed?
It's everything's proportional through stratification.
And that's okay. I would agree with Dick that that jumped out in a
fairly Republican
community.
Well,
we call it a Republican.
Right.
Yeah, Republicans were registered Republicans, 31%, registered Democrats, 14%, unaffiliated, 55%.
Okay.
So you've got it. Republicans have a 2-to-1 advantage in registration, but again, that's registration, not macro partisanship. That is how people feel about themselves as of today. If you ask people that, you'd get different numbers.
Right.
Is there a lot of people who...
And I wonder with the way the Republican primary was, that there were some Democrats who said they were going to register as Republicans so that they could vote for somebody. I mean, people did some kind of weird things this year, I thought, as far as registration.
It's possible.
The only question I didn't really understand was the one, and it seemed like an important one, something like, since the levy, are things going... How is it phrased?
Better.
They've gotten better.
No
standards have gotten worse.
Yeah.
Just to get some sense of whether or not people feel like they have observed some kind of revitalization of the school system, or they've become more confident in it despite the loss. Really, just to find out how much people are licking their wounds. And people did not really ascertain much change at all.
Okay.
Now, do you come up with an overall, like, what you feel are the most important areas to address
We had conversations
okay.
with the administration.
Jennifer's going to follow
okay.
up with that.
Yeah.
But there are some questions that I ask as a rule of thumb. They're, in my opinion, de rigueur, and the reason for that is because I think it provides perspective. I can just look at something and say, because I asked this, whether I'm in Columbus or California or Marysville, I can look at the quality of education and instantly glean something. That's why your doctor probably always checks your temperature, even if you go to him with a rash, because that's important baseline information that can tell a lot. So there are questions like that that are included as well, but some of them are unique ones for the school system.
Based on your kind of outside look at this, and I guess I may be going to what you're going to talk about, but from you, is there one area that jumps out at you that is a weakness that we need to look at, that we need to focus?
Well, there are two things in my mind. First and foremost, I think it's important to start talking about finance in a way that is very incisive and concise, because it's not something that really captivates people's attention, but it's clearly something that's important here. Second thing is, I think we've got to look at repopulating that list of marquee elements, because the ones that are on there are pretty feeble. With STEM being the top at 47%, I'm just not sure that you're going to be able to galvanize people to take action in order to preserve programs like that when the top performing one gets what it was a fairly lackluster rating, in my opinion. So I think building upon that and finding things that are really compelling to people and really eye-catching, something that's really publicly captivating, will help immensely.
But does a 330-person population address itself to a new program such as STEM? I mean, that one does jump out at me, but it may be a population type thing. In other words, we've got, 300 parents or 300 families. Mm-hmm. How many of those were in
I can tell you this. I did focus group testing about 3 weeks ago, and Jennifer had the misfortune of sitting behind me on the other side of the two-way mirror. And we talked about various aspects, programmatic aspects of the school system. And the thing that was most interesting to the respondents, you could tell not just by the number of times they mentioned it, but also by their body language and their facial expressions, was science labs. Mm. It's something that people understand is critically important.
And that question morphed about five times, right? We were trying to do kind of an awareness, like, since the cuts, do you realize we've added these programs? And we couldn't quite get to something there. And so that was really done, you know, with that in mind, I guess, as opposed to, like, adding things in, like, athletics and show choir and those kind of things. So those were new programs, really, that had surfaced after the reductions, and that question then kind of morphed into that, because we couldn't quite get to what we were trying to ask without making it too complicated.
Other questions for me?
Sure. Questions, comment, I guess. Two things kind of played in together there. One, you mentioned the parents versus non-parents, where they get their information, and the non-parents are getting it from the newspaper. And then looking at the finances, the financial management, breaking that down as opposed to the parents and non-parents.
65 and 40. It's a pretty sizable.
So I just thought that was interesting, because, like you said, the finances aren't typically a big, very interesting. If there's something about a personnel issue, that's going to hit the newspaper, whereas the five-year forecast isn't going to. So I guess the question would then be, how do you change where those people get their news if they're not going to? If the newspaper is not reporting on the finances, we need to figure out how those non-parents, how to improve.
I would say change the news they're getting.
Yeah, and that's in my opinion.
Oh, okay.
I would trust your judgment on that. Any other questions? I'm going to send a copy of this to the superintendent as well as Jennifer, so it will be available. And if you've got any subsequent questions, feel free to call me. URL for my website is right there, and the superintendent has my contact information. So if at any point you want to chat about anything further, do not hesitate to call me. But
one last thing.
Sure.
Kind of the key, I struggle, just as you've mentioned, just kind of finding that cornerstone message. But the whole workforce training aspect of things, that seemed to be one of the more positive ones. I mean, so we can play with that a little bit. That was my thing. I mean, that seemed to stand out to me.
Yeah,
tested it in a different way.
Right, yeah, we tested it in two different ways. And I was curious about the fact that when it was a part of that battery, it was overshadowed by STEM. But when you asked about it in a vacuum, people agreed that it was essential.
Right.
My gut tells me, and this is intuitive, but it may have something to do with the relationship with entities like Honda and Otterbein, who are probably viewed as being very large quasi-corporate entities who can afford to foot part of the bill. And that may be one of the reasons people are saying to themselves, we've got Honda here, why do we need to pay for this? Now, it's speculative on my part, but it may be one of the reasons that we saw that disparity. Other questions or comments? No. With that, then, I thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thank you for coming.
Thank
on.
You very
thank you.
Much.
My
appreciate
pleasure.
It. Yeah.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Chris, thank you.
Okay, so I'm not sure how many of you have met Jennifer before. Have you met the new board members?
No.
Okay, so Jennifer is our communications consultant that's worked with the district since 2012, 2013. Really trying to help. She's the one that helps coordinate our quarterly flyers that go out, helps us with messaging, editorials in the paper, all those kind of things. So Jennifer Economist, she's from Allerton Hill. We just referred to as Jennifer Economist. We don't think of her as the company, right?
Right.
But she meets with our leadership team every other week, and we work on things that are happening in the district and et cetera. So I imagine Dick is new, Brian is new, and Ed since you've last been with us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to meet all of you in person. A little bit about my background is I've been in the education field for about 15 years. I started out as a lobbyist for the Ohio School Boards Association. So, thank you. So, education is my passion. We've been working, like Diane said, by fall for almost 4 years now. And this is actually the first time we've ever had survey data besides when we did that triad. Remember when we did the triad survey, which was very focused in on those renewal levies. So this was a little bit of a deeper dive, a little bit of a different focus. So to me, it was very eye-opening. It certainly gave me some ideas of some strategies that we need, I think, to focus in on as we're looking at our communication strategies moving forward. So, looking at the survey results, I think that people place a very strong value on the schools, and they think you guys are doing a great job. So let's remind them of those things. And I think we need to connect what a great investment our schools are and what a great value. Look at all these wonderful things that you're doing. And we haven't had, a levy for new money since 2008. There's a lot of good messaging and a lot of stories, I think, that we can share that reflects upon the values of the community. I think we really need to focus in on that strong fiscal management. And I'm going to talk about how we're going to approach that. I have to admit, and this is something that I've learned in working with all of you. Right now I work with about 12 school districts myself. My company works with probably about 30 school districts in all different shapes and sizes. Urban, rural, suburban, high wealth, low wealth. We represent them all, career centers. And the one thing I've noticed about fiscal management is the conversation is changing. Have you asked the question about state funding, the tangible personal property tax, reductions in state funding? If we would ask that question 3-4 years ago, I think we would have gotten a very different response than we get now. And I'm learning that as I'm seeing the survey research come. And people are not, because the economy is doing better and things have stabilized, there's not that sympathetic view for the cut sides of things, so it's important that we emphasize what we're doing. You know, it's not somebody doing something to us. It's what we're doing to ourselves to remain fiscally responsible. So I'll get into that a little bit. But we've really got to change our conversation on that. Because we really did focus on the tangible personal property tax. And it made a lot of sense. It really, truly did. But I think what we learned from the survey results is that we kind of have to pivot a little bit from that. Because it's just not, it's kind of run its course. And I'm glad we did the survey research to find that out. And I think jobs, training, and college are going to be very key. You know, what are those things that we're doing that are training people so when they leave Marysville schools, they're going to be successful? And so I think we're going to have to personalize the story. What I've learned, again, through my work is people want a human interest story. So we've always kind of talked about things in abstract. So I think we need to work with our staff in really trying to get those feel-good, good news stories that people can see and say, oh, I get what they're doing. I get, you know, in a more personal way. So those are my takeaways from the survey research and what we can do from a communication standpoint. The way that we're going to do this is I think we need to be more formal and establish monthly themes and keep ourselves honest around that. So tell our message through stories, and I think we need to cross-market the message through the tools identified in the survey. Early on, Paul said people get information in different ways. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel every month. We just have to make sure that we're covering those stories in the different places that people get information. And the key places, I think, the key tools we need to focus in on is obviously the newspaper, and we can talk about how we're going to do that in a slide. You know, we have this love-hate relationship with them. I know Diane has done a really, really good job of trying to foster that relationship. It hasn't always been easy, and that's very common with local schools and local newspapers. So I think we have to work on that and try to do the best that we can, because this is where people get information. Obviously, the newsletter is going to be pivotal to that, especially with our parent population. We saw that. So we'll be looking at that. And we've got some challenges I think we need to address here that hopefully we can get into a system that will help us get more of those good news stories. Obviously, person-to-person is very critical. We're a tight-knit community. I think, Paul, I had kind of an aha moment. You know, we all kind of suspected that there were some grumblings out there about some anecdotal things we were hearing. And to hear Paul's reaction to some of those, although it being a small portion of people, and just to see his reaction kind of validated, we've got to kind of nurture and work that person-to-person conversation, work directly with our staff in probably a more focused and direct way, through message training, through this is what you need to do to help us get this word out. So we need to focus a little bit more on that. And then one thing that Todd and Diane and I were talking about doing next year is the state of the schools. And that's more of like an annual event or every other year event that just highlights the great things that are happening. We could do a lot of hoopla around that from a media standpoint. I don't recommend doing those every year because I've noticed with my clients that do them every year, like it's really exciting the first year if you haven't done one in a while, but then if you keep doing them, people kind of like, you know, oh, it's not so special. So we'll, but I think definitely for this year we should be thinking about doing it. Talking about the newspaper, I think we need to continue with the monthly columns. We've been very purposeful with what the messages we have in there. I'm pretty happy with them. But I think we have to maybe think about working with our staff to get more, and what I mean with work both papers, I mean the JT and this week, on some more of those good news stories. Again, it's a different world than we lived in, you know, even just 4 or 5 years ago. What kind of information did you want to present? We don't necessarily have to sell people on the quality of our schools. I don't think that needs to be our focus. But I think we need to take some of the information from the survey and say, you know, humanize the story. And what I mean by that, and Todd made the point about, well, what about, how do I tell the finance story a little bit different? And what I recommend, and we've kind of touched on this a little bit, is, you know, start talking about stories that people can relate to in their own lives. So if we've got an energy efficiency initiative where we're turning down lights in non-essential areas, just like you do with your monthly utility bills, we're doing the same things. So we're going to have more of those. You know, we're trying to go green in our schools, so kids will be going home with less paper. Like those types of kind of relatable stories from, you know, we know we're doing a good job managing money. It's evident in our five-year forecast and what a strong, stable school district we have, and we're still going to have those stories. But I think we need to pepper some of those kind of human interest, like relatable stories, into what we're doing. So we're going to have a more focused messaging around that. For the newsletter, I struggle, and because we're a small but mighty group, and this is on me, but I think, you know, what I'd like to do, Diane, is work with your staff and try to establish like a cloud or like Google Drive where we can share information and kind of get people trained on that, maybe with our principals, because there's a lot of great things going on. You can tell from social media. You know, there's just a lot of great things going on, but we're all kind of working in a vacuum and a silence because everybody's busy. And it's very challenging to ask educators because, one, they don't like to toot their own horn, and, two, they're so busy, so they don't take the time to think about, you know, where do I fit into the communications. So I think what I would suggest is we go through some training with some key staff to say, hey, can you help be a part of the communications group, and, you know, ask, you know, certain things from them. And one of those is going to be sharing those stories. You know, and then also remind staff and principals about adding content to that. So there's a... We could look at it almost as a PR thing. So we could meet with staff and say, hey, we're creating this new cloud, you know, good news cloud. We can, you know, where we can share content, we can share information, and encourage people to participate and be a part of that. We can strategically select who those people are, but we also can, that could be a newsletter article in itself. Like, we're trying to figure out ways to share information, share good news stories, so that that's also a positive story to share with the community as well.
Just wanted to make a comment.
Sure.
Emily Latham, I don't know if anybody saw it, but she wrote a letter to the editor mm-hmm. about her project. She had a project with her students about business and using math in businesses, mm-hmm. and so they all started their own companies, and she invited local business people to come in and talk to the kids first mm-hmm. and then come in, judge their business projects,
yeah.
and then at the end she wrote a letter to the editor,
right.
which is really nice. She's from Marysville,
sure.
and she was, I mean, I read that, I'm like, man, that's a great, just exactly what you're talking
on.
About.
Yeah,
here,
exactly.
You know?
And because we've been so focused in our communications, kind of like, you know, establishing our tools and then, you know, getting us through the renewals and trying to get it. And so now we've mm-hmm. kind of broken in, like, what's next? Mm-hmm. And I think these are real opportunities for us from a communication standpoint. So I think you're right on, Sue. So more about the, you know, we went over the newsletter, newspaper, person-to-person strategies. I really believe in a key communicators group. We haven't had the opportunity to set one up, but I would love to
we
see
have that.
Oh, would you?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So do they meet
I don't
monthly?
Meet as regularly as we used to.
Okay.
We,
okay. So we may have to explore on how to reinvigorate that, because that's very common. But, you know, maybe one of the ways that we kind of invigorate them is to share that monthly theme with them so that word of mouth is getting out. I know you meet with your school buildings once a month. And, you know, maybe we do a better job of focusing on, like, this is what you need to share. Here's what our monthly theme is, so that they can be a part of the communication strategy. We can talk to them about the cloud. And so just kind of reinvigorate that and redirect our focus around the good news. And then I know you guys do the coffees. How have those been for you? I know the board does them, right?
Yeah.
Do you like those? Do you get a lot of good feedback? I'm a big proponent of them.
Yeah.
I feel like, yeah, I like them, and I think we should continue them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people come in with one particular grievance. So I'm not exactly sure, like, what's the most useful thing about the coffees? Passing that on to other people or creating this sense that we're communicating with the community
right.
constantly?
Yeah.
I hope that's one of the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
You see my point?
Is, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I don't know how useful it really is for people to come in and have one very particular
right.
complaint that they talk about for 45 minutes. But maybe it's really useful. What,
yeah.
what do you think, Dick? I mean, you've seen it.
Yeah, I think they're a good thing. And we've got Ed and I are going to do it on Saturday.
Right. Oh, yeah. I remember, they're going to be out at Brookdale on Saturday for a community but then this is a special
in our experience,
out
I think
there.
You know, we've had some people
sorry.
That have come in and we've been able to direct them to Diane
be on our website,
and whatever the concern they had was addressed. Mm-hmm. You know, typically it was just the response was more conversation about it, but it alleviated some of the concerns. And I think it also allows people to come in and just, you know, to vent and express a concern and feel like I've made people aware. And I think our reaction, you know, listening, discussing with them and so forth.
I guess that's kind of my question. We're not trying to have the coffee be a place where we're putting a message out.
Right.
Is that right? That's not what I've been trying
that
to
wasn't
do.
The, that wasn't the original intent.
Yeah.
Right, right.
It was more
to give
to
them another opportunity,
to
share comments, mm-hmm. concerns, whatever. And there have been, I mean, I know the one that Amy and I did, I thought was really good.
It was.
Because a bunch of people from the Coral Boosters were there. But there were some good results.
The only thing I don't like about them is mm-hmm. that they then do not come to the board meetings.
Okay.
And express. Okay. In front of a whole group. Do you know what I'm saying? That's the only thing.
Oh, so they don't think, right. Yeah, you're doing a great job. They do.
Right.
Like,
they
okay.
want to, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Or they don't bring it to the mm-hmm. whole board because they feel like Dick's going to go back and solve it or Brian's going to go back and solve it. And, you know, so they skip the step of following up mm-hmm. and coming to a board meeting to say, hey, what information did you find about, you know what I mean?
Oh,
so
okay,
it's
sure.
kind of like the ones that want to complain, but yet don't want to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. You understand what I mean? So
mm-hmm.
I see the drawback to it, too.
Okay.
And I think some people might feel more comfortable in that
smaller
setting.
Yeah.
Right.
And coming to a public board meeting mm-hmm. and making it a matter of...
Right.
Right.
So there's pros and cons,
yeah.
I think, both ways on it. And probably if you sit down and put it together, the pros probably outweigh the cons. But I just see the little bit of a con that they're not associated with, or they think that... that particular person, you know what I mean? It's almost like they call you up and want you to fix it.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? It's the same concept. Well, mm-hmm. I can't fix it. You have to go through these steps, and then you have to follow through, and you have, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, you list, it's just really basically a listening session.
Yeah, it is, but then I think, I mean, if we're doing it the right way and directing them to the right people and making sure that their questions are answered and all that kind of stuff. And I think that the benefit there is just that you've got people that were upset that now feel like they've been heard.
Right.
And they've been answered.
Mm-hmm. And
oftentimes it's a good solution, you know. And if it's not a good solution, the fact that they've been heard and answered is huge, I think, when you have people that are angry.
I would actually prefer that conversation to have in a more informal setting.
Right,
you know,
right.
That would be because, again, we can't control... you know, JT's going to do what JT does.
Yes,
you know, so it's nice to have a forum where it's a little bit more, you know, informal. But I do see what you're saying, you know. But I do think there's real value in it. I think, you know, it could be an opportunity. I think you're all spot on, you know, what you perceive as the value of it, and I agree wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. But it could also be an opportunity for us to talk about some of the positive things, too.
Mm-hmm.
So we can make it a two-way street.
If you have that monthly theme or something,
exactly.
You know, then that we can tie that in and take 5 or 10 minutes at the beginning mm-hmm. of the coffee. Hey, we wanted to update you on this first, and then...
Mm-hmm. I think Sue and I had a lot of good feedback. We talked about things that were happening and that had already happened, like in mm-hmm. the choir stuff. When they were saying, well, did you not know we had that? No, but we didn't. But this is what took place, and this is what you got. Mm-hmm. So we had that conversation with them, which was really good.
Yeah.
Well, this was Saturday mm-hmm. I picked up some of the monthly newsletters mm-hmm. just to have those available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's some good things.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think we do a good job with the newsletters, but I think we could do a lot better. And, you know, I think, you know, as a, you know, we're a small but mighty school district, but I think we need to put more of a focus in on engaging our people to be a part of that. So that's what I'm hoping to, that's like my big project, I think, for the year fall.
I did actually have one person comment once that, you know, hey, these newsletters, only thing in them is good. Why don't you ever share some of your challenges? You know,
we try to do that through the strategic plan and through the, you know, but
yeah,
if that's a
worst thing people say about us. That's right. Pretty good thing. That's why. I'll take that.
I agree.
That's constructive criticism. So, but no, I hear that loud and clear. So, you know, building upon, you know, what I really want to do, and this is something I really, really struggle with, and all my clients, is we don't want to put too much, you know, hey, by the way, we're going to add more to your plate, especially our principals. We have to be very, very sensitive to that. Fortunately, I've worked with enough people to say, okay, these are the things we need to focus on. These are the things that won't give you the bang for your buck. So I'm all about low input, high impact. So we want to make it, it's my job to make it as easy as possible on them to help us implement the communications plan. So what I want to do is, you know, once we kind of establish the monthly themes, ask, you know, we would set up like just a quick blurb and we would say, and you know, almost like you get them accustomed to it. So every, like the third Friday of every month, they get something from us. Here's our theme. You're going to see it in the newspaper. This is what we're talking about. You know, if you could incorporate that in the way you communicate, because you know how, you know, my principal, she sends out a blog every week. You know, everybody, email, there's all different ways. So however, you may be good on Twitter. However you communicate with your people, you know, start incorporating some of that messaging. But we early on, we need to establish some expectations, and that may include Diane and I working on some sort of training, for lack of a better term. But here are our expectations. Here's something we want to experiment with. Here's the way that we're going to get it done. Here's how you can help us. You know, going back to that cloud idea. You know, let's share some good stories. Let's do these things. Here's what you can do to help us do that. And a lot of it could be, you know, using Storify, like, through social media, like, trying to, you know, or hashtag, any way that we can catalog some of these good stories. And by doing that, we can pick up on that and then elaborate on it. So, you know, it's really kind of exploring those ways to kind of make it as easy as possible on them to share their stories. Like I said, low input, high impact will be my goal. Financial communication, you know, beyond like we talked about more PR on finances in the newspaper and newsletters, again, around those kind of human interest themes that people can relate to, is we already talked about this as a team, to kind of reinvigorating that financial advisory committee. I don't know if that's the formal name for it. But, you know, they are a good third-party validation of our work. So I want to work with the team on, you know, establishing, you know, them on a quarterly schedule. We'll do, you know, press releases and information out when they meet so that it gets some PR. And just getting them kind of regularly meeting and looking at things like the 5-year forecast, like, because there's a lot of great information in there. And then we can have them follow up with letters to the editor. You know, I serve on the Marysville Financial Task Force. I can tell you I've looked at the numbers and they're really doing a good job with things. So it's really kind of using a group like that. That's a very typical strategy that we've used with clients that are under that 50% threshold. Not that we're far beneath that. I would not sound an alarm bell over that whatsoever. I think that's still pretty much in the wheelhouse of where most suburban school districts are, but certainly it's a place that we can focus in on. So I think trying some of these things might help. And that's one strategy that we've done. So we've talked about that.
Did anybody get a sense of that group that does have concerns that the finances are not being managed as well mm-hmm. as they think they should? Mm-hmm. Did anybody get a sense of which group that is? Like,
who's our non-parents.
And where they're getting their message.
Well, it was our non-parents, yeah. And then I don't remember if we correlated it back to where they're getting their message or not. But
we can ask Paul to look into that. That's a good point.
That's,
I mean, it's a fraction of a fraction.
I know. But still, it was one thing that jumped out of all mm-hmm. of those.
Right, you're right.
I was surprised at that, and it just makes me wonder, like, who are these people and where are they getting their information? And if it's mostly people who are getting their information from the newspaper, that's tells me about a particular strategy, you see.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah, and he did say it was, if I have to look back, we could probably pull up his presentation, but I think it correlated with more of the non-parent, because I think the parents were pretty solidly behind us. Mm-hmm. So that's why we were talking about more of the PR on finances in the the newspaper in particular. So we'll have to work on that. And again, it's got to be more of that. We're going to have to generate it ourselves, because mm-hmm. you know, the JT is not going to do any favors for us. So we'll have to really kind of think about.
I like the example you gave earlier.
Yeah.
Like one project.
Right.
Could be, you know, some gadget that saves a bunch of energy money. Some, you know, it's it may not even be that big on the bottom line, Todd, but it would get a story. It would get a story in the newspaper, right. And people would say, "Oh, wow, they're really fiscally responsible." You know, we already know that, but
right, I agree. So, and the last thing I want to talk about was this earned income tax. I think Paul kind of laid the groundwork for us, which that really shouldn't surprise any of us because it is would be a daunting task. If we want to go that way, I think it's got to be heavy community engagement needed. Like, we've got to kind of test it. I think he said some interesting things about chambers, so we may want to start thinking about testing waters with kind of key people out there before we would ever want to go full board. But I think if we do get a green light, or if we do want to go in this direction, we're going to have to do heavy community because people want to be wooed. Paul talked about that focus group that we attended a couple weeks ago. It is very fascinating to just to really dig deep into a big, and this client is happening to go through a facilities like a bond issue where they're going to be spending hundreds of millions of dollars revamping historical buildings. And the sense I got from people, which should not really surprise any of us, is that people love to be wooed. They love to be catered to. They love process. They want to feel like they're a part of something. So if we're going to go down this path, we're going to have to think about, you know, having a pretty comprehensive community engagement. Now, I'm not saying, oh, we're going to start tomorrow, because we've got time. We've got the luxury of time, because we wouldn't be looking at if, you know, hypothetically, when would we be looking at an earned income tax?
After 2020.
Right. So, I mean, and it does take time, you know, to look into develop something like this. But if we do, you know, we'd have to give ourselves, you know, at least a couple of years. And there's no drawback. I mean, depending on, like, if the gods of the community, you know, say you may go. Besides that, once we kind of get through that hurdle, which I think is a critical hurdle that Paul mentioned, if we go out and we're transparent and we engage the community and we get feedback that people don't like it, there's nothing wrong with us saying that, you know, we tried this and it just didn't work. I'm a big believer on we want to do what you want us to do, but we've got to state our case and we've got to help direct people in that direction. And again, this is all just very arbitrary conversation right now, but as we're thinking about that, because that was a key as a part of the survey, I think that's going to have to be a big part of it, obviously, because it's tough. It's been a long time since, you know, it's pretty big. But it's good to hear, though, that other districts are increasing their income taxes, and, you know, we're surrounded by communities with income taxes. Mm-hmm. So any thoughts on this? What do you guys think about this? I'd love to hear what you think about the earned income tax and, you know, just in general.
I think in general, people want somebody else to pay.
Right. Yeah. Don't we all?
So they look at it and think, well, my income's not very high.
Right.
So if we have an income tax, somebody else is going to be paying the bill. You know, I own a, you know, particularly people that are my age, older, you know, they've got a house, and so they're sensitive to property taxes. They don't think that they have a lot of income that's going to be earned. So letting younger generations pay for the school, I think, is a part of the picture. But I think what Paul said also is, you know, it's complex. The data could be from someone, you know, a long-term resident who might be 21, 24, 25 years old, and their income's not necessarily very high at that point. So, you know, they may be trying to look at buying a house and thinking about, you know, property taxes on that end.
Any other thoughts on it?
I mean, I've always been intrigued by that, especially because of the demographics in Marysville.
Sure,
you know, it seems like if it would work in a community, that this would be a community that might have more success with it than others, just because we do have an older population.
Yeah.
And we have a pretty stable workforce with Honda and Scott's, and, you know, we have some good employees around here. But I think we have a great relationship with our Chamber of Commerce too. So
no,
I think it'd be interesting to have that conversation. I think I talked to a commissioner back when I got elected at the beginning, and he had made a comment that I think there was maybe a quarter of a percent available somewhere that they, I don't know.
And we have to think about
that's
the dynamics.
Sales tax.
Okay, that was a sales tax.
You know,
yeah,
and,
so right
now
it's different.
We got to think about the dynamics. You make a good point. As I'm thinking about this, like, we got to think of the dynamics of the city. You know,
right.
Well, how would they feel about this?
You know, the city already has.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. You know, there's turf wars here, you know.
Yeah,
and
the one time the school district tried to pass one, it failed miserably here. Now, I don't know, there's always lots of dynamics in that, but, and it's been 20-some years since it was attempted, but it did fail miserably.
Yeah.
When people really saw the numbers, you know, that was...
Yeah.
When, you know, it was, you know, not as popular in my
opinion. Is there an upper limit as there was 20 years ago? Is there a cap on it now?
A cap on the percentage you can?
Yeah. It used to be 1%.
Well, you can go higher than that. I know that. I don't know of a cap.
Student PA is 1.5 or something. I don't know.
I think Fairbanks is 1.5. I'd have to go back and look.
Okay.
I mean, even if they're the numbers that I look at other schools. I mean, if that's something we were to look at, it would be something that would be well below any cap if there were a cap.
Okay, but if we do decide to start exploring that, I mean, obviously, I think we'd have to walk before we run. But then once we get serious about it, I think we would need to think about some community engagement so people feel like they're a part of the decision. And then we'd have to focus in on, like, the value. For example, if you are on a fixed income, there's real value there. Benefit, if you're a parent, I think that's very critical. Because we saw our parent support. Even they were over 50%. They probably don't quite understand it. And I do get what Paul's saying about the whole Sophie's choice, you know, with no as well. So we always have to consider that. But the survey results show that people, our parents in particular, are willing to pay to maintain and to grow our schools and keep us on a path of success. So maybe we have that conversation, very targeted conversations with who we're in front of about that. And obviously protecting your investment in your schools and continuing to provide stability, I think that those are all important things. And I think those things are important to everyone. So those are just some ideas. As we're moving forward, once we're ready to have that conversation, I think we have to really think and have a specific communication plan just for that. So that's really my kind of strategy in a nutshell, a very 50,000-foot view that I'll be working with the team on. I really do want to get us on those monthly themes. I really do want to get in front of a couple key staff people and just kind of talk about how they can help us be a part of it and how we can help them do their jobs, because I really want to be sensitive and don't want them to feel like we're adding more to their plate, but yet they do have to be a part of it. That's a reality. So any other questions or things that you think are missing? I purposely did not put social media in here, if you've noticed. That was on purpose. I think that we need to focus in on these things right now before we even... Because I think you've got a nice, stable social media presence. But once I think we get a handle on some of these things, then we can start talking about being creative with that.
Can we go back briefly to the point that came up about word of mouth? It was
sure.
There seemed to be some sense in the room that I don't know, a disgruntled faction amongst let's say staff could actually start almost like a chain of anecdotes that pass through the community. Do you remember when that sort of came up earlier today? And like, is anybody concerned about that? And if so, is there a way to talk to, like, let's say, teachers about how important word of mouth really is in building up the image of of the district?
I mean, we've done media training with staff before. We could do a general one again as a part of, we did it as a part of, like, a professional development day where I take, like, 20 minutes and we kind of talk about the value of communications and how they can be a part of it. I think that could be something if we want to do that. I definitely see a lot of value in that. I think that's a great point. But I also think we need to be probably a little bit more strategic about our key communicators groups. Like for, you know, Diane works and talks to staff once a month. You know, I think her and I need to sit down and figure out how can we maximize, knowing that there potentially could be a little bit of a angst. You know, how can we deal with this? And this is very common, by the way. I mean, these are things that we deal with. Every school district deals with. And but you know, maybe Diane and I can sit down and talk about ways that we can, you know, work with that through our kind of internal key communicators and being a little bit more purposeful in what we're sharing.
Do you think there is much awareness among staff that when they talk, they may have a very real grievance? I'm not disputing whether that they have legitimate, but is there an awareness that by talking to their friends and neighbors about a particular aspect, like the, what was it about not having lunch or something, that can circulate and change the image of the school system? Is there an awareness of that amongst the staff? Or would you say not really?
I would say there's awareness.
Yeah, there's a consciousness. Mm-hmm. It's done for a reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I think they're aware.
Yeah.
They're aware.
And I mean, that's something that you just work on continuously. I mean, you're going to have a challenge in any work situation, I think, you know, but we have a lot of employees, and going through transition is always challenging, and just all the demands, I think.
I think, too, the sense that things aren't like they used to be,
right,
and the desire to maybe have them be like they used to be,
right,
still exists with a certain amount of our staff.
Yes. It's kind of like a backward look instead of a forward look attitude. You know, I wish I had this instead of, I'm excited about some of the opportunities that we have now because of our change in strategy and our partnerships and things like that, you know, which kind of makes me think about the high school and just how it's going to be so important to share the stories at the exciting thing that's going on at the high school with the Japanese Honor Society, mm-hmm, and some of those new programs, and just making sure that we talk about them and try to get those in the paper.
It goes back to the point that you were trying to make, in that there are a lot of good news stories. There are, right, a lot of positive things that are going on. And so if those don't get mentioned, if those don't get highlighted, if those don't get held up as shining examples, then I think people that are either connected with them or in the building when those kinds of things are going on aren't going to react in a positive way. They aren't going to get that perception that, mm-hmm, that things are going well in their building or in their part of the school district. So,
yeah, I mean, it's a very common struggle. You know, there's some in some community, and most, this is the one thing, like when I talk to superintendents, what do you want to work on? I know, internal communications. They all say it, and it is an ongoing struggle because people, I mean, especially, we are a customer service business, but we don't see ourselves as a customer service business. You know, and so, you know, it's one thing to say, you know, you work for Walt Disney World, and, you know, of course, service, you know, they have that whole thing. Well, now there's this expectation of educators that they act more like that. If you're in a service industry, there's that expectation. So you're seeing that it takes a while, but there's got to be that shift. And part of the responsibility is for us to say, okay, here's our vision, here's what we, what our expectations are. So hopefully we can continue to work on that. Mm-hmm. But generally, I think people value the schools, and they want to support their schools, and they want to see you all success, and they all think you're doing a great job. But when it comes to communications, there's always room for improvement. So hopefully we can you know, change our strategy a little bit based on this survey data and keep doing all the great things we're doing. So, any other questions? Okay.
Thank
it's very
you.
Nice to meet you all, finally. Great.
Nice meeting you.
Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure working with all of you.
Well, thanks. I appreciate everything you do. Help share all the good stories. So, yep.
We'll work on it.
Okay. Let's see. Next, then, any other questions or comments before I take a motion to go into executive session to consider the employment and compensation of a public employee or official? And I think I was also going to add the section about negotiations, because I have some information to share. So I'm not sure. I should know the number, but I don't know the number. So I need a motion to go into
executive.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Second.
Okay, motion by Amy and second by Ed. Can I have a roll call, please?
Ms. Powers?
Yeah.
Mr. Pleasant?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Okay, so we are in executive session at 5:27. First thing